That's Islands of the Galapagos by Cusco. And yes, we are about to talk about the Galapagos. Kristen Henning is an American-born travel writer who, for the past 7 years, has traveled the world like a nomad with her husband Tom, having sold the family home in Minnesota. She spoke with Graham about a recent 8-day visit to the Galapagos, where she interviewed her national parks guide, Pablo Valderas Salgado, on the island of Santa Cruz, 1,000 miles off the Ecuadorian coast.
You and your husband, basically a nomad, you sold the family home. You've tripped around the world now for a couple of years. I think you're back in the U.S. at the minute, but you've just come from the Galapagos, yeah?
That's right, and it's great to be back. We've been tripping around the world for 7 years now, believe it or not. But this was our first visit to the Galapagos, even though when we first started traveling, we lived in Ecuador for 9 months and never made it out to the Galapagos. So we just jumped at this chance, and I just got back a couple days ago.
Okay. So tell us, how do you get to the Galapagos? You fly into South America. Whereabouts, and then how do you get out to the island?
Quito is where everyone from our group gathered, the capital of Ecuador. We spent a couple of days there. And flying from Quito to, there are now two or three airports in the Galapagos, but we flew from Quito, stopping for passengers but not disembarking in Guayaquil, Ecuador, and then onto San Cristobal, which is the easternmost of the islands. And that is one of four islands that has that is populated, that has a town.
Okay.
They're not big towns.
No. How big is the archipelago?
It is, I don't even know how many islands in total, but it is quite spread out and really falls on both sides of the equator. It's about 1,000 kilometers off the coast of Ecuador. So it's a 2.5-hour flight from Quito. And we traveled between the islands by boat, of course, and those were all 2.5, 3-hour, 3.5-hour rides, which is pretty quick by boating standards. It used to take twice that long.
Yeah, and comfortable ride in the boat, or do you have big seas
down
there?
There could be swells. We had really quite calm seas. It bothers some people, and it doesn't bother others. Some took motion sickness pills, but it swells more than choppy when we were there.
Okay.
A lot of the boats that are used for transportation are old fishing boats, because the communities there have gone from almost entirely fishing-based economy to tourism, and so these fishing boats are transformed. We had about 12 people in our boat with 3 200-horsepower motors on the back, and off we went.
Right. Now, you went to Galapagos, and you've said to me in a note that you basically were there in a land-based tourism visit, and that it was all about visitor relations and wildlife protection. Now, I know you did spend some time with a terrific guide, and we do have some words from him that we'll possibly hear through our interview. Tell us about Pablo. Is he an Ecuadorian, or
he is Ecuadorian. And the land-based tourism, first of all, is just sort of a growing concept, so that it's not cruise ships coming in and dropping people through water-based activities who never then visit the islands and the local communities. Pablo is part of the local community. He lives on Isabela, and he is a biologist, worked for the Darwin Institute, and he is now a naturalist for the national parks. I'm with Pablo Valladares Salgado, who is a biologist and a national park naturalist guide in the Galapagos. We are in Santa Cruz right now in the town of Puerto Ayora. And Pablo, I had the good fortune to have Pablo as a guide this past week with Galakiwi Tours. My question for you, Pablo, is just for some comments on the interaction, good and bad, the outcome of the interaction of people and humans with this very young natural set of islands, and how the changes have been positive and negatively impacted.
Okay. I do think that Galapagos is an excellent example of how we humans can learn to share our lives with wildlife and with all the beauty of nature. I do believe that the Galapagos Islands are a micro example of our entire planet. We do have people here, but it's just since very recently, 1535, when the islands were discovered by accident. And before these islands were never got contact with human beings before. Like a kind of legend that pre-Columbian civilizations came to the islands, but it was not that useful for them, the place, and it was so hard to come that they just stopped coming. And what does it mean? It means that until those years, all the Galapagos wildlife was isolated of us, of humans. By the way, the Galapagos wildlife didn't know about fearing us. And I'm sure that you have seen this in this week that we have been sharing together. Like, the sea lions are just there, like, taking a nap, and you are just walking by them. The iguanas are just, like, resting, warming up, and they don't care about you. Birds, many times, don't fly away. They just stay, keep feeding, being relaxed and happy. So this unique behavior of fearless wildlife in Galapagos is saying, hey, we still can find this balance. And it's showing us, it's showing to the people in the world that we still have a chance to live in harmony with nature. I think that this is something fantastic. Eh? But the other side, like a kind of negative impact as well, is that with the visit of humans, of us, to the Galapagos Islands, we brought species that never were here before, that didn't go through the process of natural selection, that were just suddenly brought in an easy way, and these species just started to take over the unique species of the Galapagos Islands. So this is something bad.
Give us some examples of
For example, they introduce black rats, they introduce Norwegian rats, they introduce cats. We didn't have in Galapagos any big land mammal before. Mm. The largest land animal in the Galapagos Islands was the giant tortoise. And now we have like feral cattle, we do have feral donkeys, we do have feral cats, still some feral dogs as well. The worst are the feral pigs and the rats. So this is an example of how we humans could change and impact in a negative way a very fragile place. Then we do have something else, positive, and is when you are in a place like this, you can find yourself surrounded by nature and you are in peace, you can get the opportunity to learn more about yourself, and you can have a spiritual experience in such a pure place, such a pristine place.
And it's really so critical, I think, to be using those local guides. They do control to some extent, well, to a large extent, the numbers of visitors. And certainly, we just learned so much about him and how to approach wildlife and about the wildlife and about the history of the islands, not just from the wildlife standpoint, but from the standpoint of human
incursion on the islands and the impact over really a pretty short time. You know, the first people to, the islands were discovered by accident in the 1500s. So we've really only had people occupying the islands, not even for those 500 years, but certainly from Darwin's time on. It became much more popular after the 19th century.
And I imagine you found, as others have found, that the animals that you meet aren't really afraid of humans.
No, they went through all of these. These are volcanic islands, and so life forms have taken their sweet time developing on each of the islands. The newest islands are about a million years old, and the oldest ones are about a million and a half years old. So the wildlife had all of these millions of years and centuries to develop without any impact from humans.
So and you walked around today, among them, did you? Is that?
Yes, and wild tortoises in the wild, or a bird landing on the path in front of you, won't scurry away or won't necessarily fly away from a branch that's 3 feet away from you. It's really phenomenal, and it's something that we naturally wanted to treat with a lot of respect.
Are any of these animals endangered now because they don't fear humans, or what's the situation?
The tortoises were nearly extinguished from some islands because the whalers, the sailors, would stop by the islands and pick up tortoises to take to their ships so they would have meat to eat as they progressed around the world. So they were really decimated, and there's still breeding centers on a couple of the islands, which are very fascinating visits, and they're all very keenly accounted for and eventually released into the wild. Okay. We did on our last day visit some in the wild and just walked around and, oh, there's one. It's just really quite surprising.
So you must have had a great chance to take plenty of photographs of these animals up close, yeah?
Yes, we did. And in the water as well. We did a lot of activities on land and water. Snorkeling was crazy because you would see a sea turtle every couple of minutes.
Right.
And we saw sharks and all kinds of fish. Penguins, they're the only warm water penguins in the world are in the Galapagos, and we were lucky enough to see two or three. And of course, the birds are pretty crazy too.
Okay.
The famous blue-footed booby.
And that was our reporter, Kristen Henning, speaking about her visit to the Galapagos. And because this is such a seldom covered destination, we're going to bring you the second part of that story next week.
Listening to the Travel Writers Show on JAIR 87.8 FM.